This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the American Monetary Association's podcast, where we explore how monetary policy impacts the real lives of real people and the action steps necessary to preserve wealth and enhance one's lifestyle.
Welcome to the podcast for the American Monetary Association. This is your host, Jason Hartman, and this is a service of my private foundation, the Jason Hartman Foundation. Today, we have a great interview for you, so I think you'll enjoy it. And comment on our website or our blog post. We have a lot of resources there for you, and you can find that at AmericanMonetaryAssociation.org. That's AmericanMonetaryAssociation.org, or the website for the foundation, which is JasonHartmanFoundation.org. Thanks so much for listening, and please visit our website and enjoy our extensive blog and other resources there. It's my pleasure to welcome John Taft. He is CEO of RBC Wealth Management, former chairman of the Securities Industry and Financial Markets Association. He's author of A Force for Good, How Enlightened Finance Can Restore Faith in Capitalism, and Stewardship, Lessons Learned from the Lost Culture of Wall Street. He's also the great-grandson of President and Chief Justice William Howard Taft, and he's coming to us today from Minneapolis. John, welcome. How are you?
Good, thank you. Glad to be on your show, Jason.
It's good to have you. So tell us, why is Wall Street important to society?
You can't even begin to imagine a modern economy without a financial system. It's integral in so many ways to the system of financial capitalism that today, not just during our lifetimes, but let's say since the start of the 20th century, has become the dominant socioeconomic model in the world. It relies on, it's powered by finance. And all the things that we want to get from our economic system require a financial system that supports it. So that's why the financial services industry and financial markets and the financial system is important to us.
Right, right. Yeah, it certainly is. And I don't think anybody who's really thinking about that question would deny that. I guess people just get so discouraged with all of the scandals and the crookery going on Wall Street. And you address that in The Lost Culture. I seem to think that really changed in the 80s. I don't know where you would put that change, but you know, maybe you can speak to that.
Well, if you look at the history of Wall Street, if you will, and let's remember, Wall Street is just a word people use to describe the financial system. I mean, most of what people mean when they say Wall Street isn't on Wall Street. You know, most of the financial institutions in our country are outside of New York State, spread across the country, you know, tens of thousands of community institutions. But when people say Wall Street, they mean the financial system. And throughout its history, it has strayed from time to time from its underlying mission, purpose, and values, which should be to support economic growth in a way that makes everybody better off than they would be without the financial system. So the most recent example of that, of course, was the financial crisis, driven by excessive leverage, most of it in the housing sector. But as you point out, there have been other examples, maybe every 10 to 20 years, where Wall Street gets off the track, forgets what it's supposed to be doing for society, and starts focusing on things that lead to dysfunctional behavior. Why does that happen? Well, there are many books written about that, you know, but I think what it all comes down to fundamentally is that the opportunities to make life-changing amounts of money in the financial services industry are probably greater than in almost any other sector in our economy, and that just seems to lead people to lose their moral and ethical bearings periodically. And that's why we keep seeing these financial market driven crises in our economies.
Yeah, very interesting. When I make this comment, John, understand that I am most certainly a dyed-in-the-wool capitalist. I don't think Wall Street is very capitalistic, oddly, in a way, because with all of the regulation that goes on that is ostensibly to protect the little guy, what that really does is limit the playing field. It keeps new entrants out and makes the market less free and more monopolistic. I mean, I don't think anybody goes to Wall Street thinking they're going to help society. Maybe you're the only one.
Well, actually, that's not true.
Okay.
And in the course of writing my books, in the course of 35 years in this industry, if you go to the quote-unquote old-timers, and I'm starting to become an old-timer, they will talk about the reasons they went to work on Wall Street, let's use that phrase. And it was about making the world a better place, helping corporations raise money so they could grow and create jobs. Or in my case, I started by working with state and local governments, not-for-profit organizations, public agencies, to raise money for projects like building schools, bridges, convention centers, redeveloping commercial districts in blighted downtowns. Those were the things I worked on for more than a decade in my career, and that's the reason I went to Wall Street, to help make the world a better place. That seems like a quaint and antiquated and outdated notion today, and that's part of the problem. One of the things you need to know, though, is there's a lot of talk these days about too big to fail and the fact that the market's gotten too big. And you say, well, maybe regulation has protected the firms that are already there. All you have to do is look north of the border. I happen to work for a Canadian bank. And north of the border, you have a financial system that's really dominated by 5 or 6 banks. So it is much more concentrated than the financial system in the U.S., which, as I say, has tens of thousands of financial institutions. And yet in Canada, you had a financial system that going into and through the financial crisis behaved exactly the way we would want our financial system to behave. They were true centers of stability. The banks now, all of them made money during the financial crisis. None of them even cut their dividends, much less went out of business. So concentration and size isn't the problem. The problem is this stewardship concept, which is, why do financial services institutions exist? Do they exist to make money for their employees? No. Do they exist to make money for their shareholders? Well, yes, but that takes second place, actually, to serving a social purpose. Canada, they remembered that. In the U.S., we forgot it. And The Big Short and other movies that have been made, Too Big to Fail and so forth, there have been dozens of them, are all about the fact that we forgot why we exist or should exist. That's the core problem.
Yeah, very interesting. And I mean, Wall Street and the old joint stock company, which is, I guess, how it all started, that is so important because if we don't have this system that aggregates capital and allows companies to do ginormous, that's not an actual word, I'm sure, but huge projects, technology would never have advanced if we didn't have the kind of capital formation required for companies like Intel and Boeing and Airbus.
Right.
And that's so important. And I admit, and probably haven't heard me do this, but I love to bash Wall Street. I do that. And I say it's like a modern version of organized crime. I get so cynical about it. But conceptually, you're right. It's absolutely critical. I mean, if we don't have this kind of thing, it would be a very small world of a bunch of mom and pop everything. And the evidence of this, and I've traveled to 78 countries now, and the evidence of this is you just go to other countries, go south of the border, go to Mexico. And of course, there's massive graft and corruption, and, huge crime problems. But over the course of decades, you look at these countries, the big thing that's missing is capital formation. And I would also say a secondary mortgage market. Those two elements are giant for creating an advanced economy. You've got the guy selling tacos on the street in Mexico, whereas, in the U.S., you've got the SBA, or, I mean, I'm no fan of government doing it, but you've got ability to get capital to open a store and do things right and open that restaurant and have good systems and good equipment. But you don't have that in most other countries, or at least not developing countries.
You're right. I'm picking up on what you said, two points I would make. First of all, the fundamental function of financial institutions is to take the money from people who have it, you know, savers, investors, and make it available to people who can deploy it, you know, corporations, governments, not-for-profit organizations, manage the risk of that intermediate function and do so in a way that everybody is better off. And one of the things that keeps getting lost today, as you hear all the talk about income disparities in the United States, which are worth paying attention to because they are the source of political unrest, which isn't good for growth. But one of the things that gets lost is that around the world, as capitalism powered by finance has become the dominant economic model, is how much better off vast portions of the world population are today versus a quarter of a century ago, even. Capitalism has improved standards of living. Capitalism has moved billions of people out of poverty. And if you didn't have the financial system to power capitalism, that never would have happened. But we don't hear that narrative today.
Right.
Certainly not in the political debate currently.
No, we certainly don't. It's the big, evil, rich people and the thing. But, you know, let's just dissect that a little bit more if we can, because none of my listeners, I mean, we got a few socialists, I'm sure, out there, but, you know, they're just lost, okay? They've been bathed in the leftist university system for too long, right?
Watch it. My father was the dean of Yale University, yeah. I think.
but I would hardly view Yale as far left, okay?
So, all right.
You know, but it's progressively become, you know, more that socialist direction.
Yes.
Because, you know, these are people that work 12 hours a week. They're not in the real world. I'm talking about the professors, you know. They're not in the real world, most of them. Certainly business schools have people that run companies teaching their classes. But anyway, that's a different argument. But going back to my point, is Wall Street really capitalistic? Or is it an insider's club? No one's going to disagree in their right mind that capitalism is good. I mean, it's great. It's fantastic. But do we have capitalism? That would be my question.
I would frame the question, which is an important one, a little bit differently, and point you to the writings of a guy named Roger Martin, who was one of the contributors to my book, A Force for Good. Roger Martin is one of the most respected business school deans, now former, Rotman School in Toronto. And he writes about real markets and expectations markets, which are really the markets in the real world where companies are making things for real people to use, charging them for that, receiving revenues. And then there's the expectations market, which is the stock market, which are people betting, if you will, on financial securities. And what happens from time to time is that the financial system and financial companies move away from what should be their focus on helping real players in real markets and get wound up in transacting in expectations markets. And once you do that, you lose your bearings, because we're not about the expectations market. We should be about facilitating activity in the real market. And what happened going into the financial crisis, and this is my perspective, is that the businesses that actually helped real people, like, believe it or not, investment banking, like asset management, you know, helping pension funds manage money for their beneficiaries, or wealth management, helping individuals manage their wealth, those businesses lost ground and lost credibility to the more profitable businesses, which became trading businesses, who had nothing to do with clients. Just give a trader some of the bank's balance sheet and let them trade it for what purpose? To make money for shareholders and make money for themselves. Once those traders started to dominate the financial institutions, now you had the disconnect between what we should be doing and what they were doing, and that's what led us into the financial crisis. The good news is that since the financial crisis, for a whole bunch of reasons, A, because investors are demanding it, and B, because regulators are requiring it, financial institutions are moving away from activities that are purely about making money in expectations markets, and they are going back into businesses that are about helping real people in the real world. And the more we do that, the more likely it is we are grounded in reality, and the more likely it is we can be a force for positive social outcomes, which mm-hmm. ultimately leads to how credible are we? To the extent we do that, people will like us. People we trust will trust us. To the extent we're off making money for ourselves, they won't.
Yeah, where are all the clients' yachts, as the saying goes, right?
Exactly. Yeah. That's a very pithy way to phrase it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What do we do about this? You can't legislate morality, as the old saying goes. What's going to ever fix the problem? I mean, is it more regulation or is it less regulation or something else altogether?
Well, part of it is better regulation. I mean, one of the problems we had going into the financial crisis was that a lot of the regulatory infrastructure was built and then just kind of remodeled over many, many decades from the Great Depression, you know, 1930s. And the world obviously has changed dramatically. And so regulators just didn't have the tools to do what was necessary to create guardrails for 21st century financial institutions. So we've been in the process of the single biggest rewrite and rebuilding of regulatory infrastructure in our lifetimes. Now, like everything, the pendulum is swinging too far. And I think we're in the process of going from too little and outdated regulation to too much regulation, and it will swing back eventually. We'll get the balance right. So that's one thing. But the second thing, as you point out, no amount of legislation, and you can't possibly write enough rules or make them complicated enough or extensive enough to get at the core issue, which is that do you have people who go to work every day in the financial system and focus on their mission, purpose, and value, which is about helping real people in real markets in the real world? How do you make that happen? I've written two books about that, and there is a growing literature about what needs to happen in order to do that. For people who want to like go to one place and get some of the best thinking about what it takes, I would point them to the website of the CFA Institute. And the CFA is a gold standard of professional certification in the financial services industry. If you get a CFA, it's like a PhD.
And that's a charter financial analyst. That's hard to get. It's not like
it
a CFP.
3 years.
Yeah,
intensive.
Right. Yeah.
But on their website are a whole series of tangible, practical measures they have been sponsoring and supporting. And I'm a member of the CFA Institute, but I'm not a CFA. But nonetheless, I look at them and I say they are doing better thinking and they are doing more impactful stuff to keep the focus of our industry on our proper role in society. Everything from codes of ethics for individual participants and firms, to they went out to their, you know, hundreds of thousands of members and said, give us a list of what we can do to improve integrity in the financial services industry. They sponsored a whole initiative I was very, very fortunate to be part of called the Future of Finance Initiative, which is all about how do we make finance a force for good in the world. And that was the impetus for my second book. So you have to have leadership, and you have to have committed leadership talking about doing the right thing. And that means reconnecting the businesses they run to mission, purpose, and values. I believe more of that is going on today than at any time since the financial crisis. But we see over and over and over again how easy it is for Wall Street to lose sight of what's really important.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It just requires, it's like a daily renewal.
Yeah, right.
And that's what we have to be involved in.
Yeah, good points. Whenever I hear the phrase financial innovation, I want to run for the hills. It scares me.
So now on that point, that's a great point. But the Nobel laureate, again, a contributor to my book, the last one in economics, Robert Shiller, you know, the K-Shiller
yep.
Index.
Yeah, sure, of course.
Okay, wrote a book called, I think it was called Finance in the Good Society, and it was about the role of financial innovation in making the world a better place. The point being, his point being, that innovation per se is neither good or bad. It's what is the purpose to which innovation is put.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And he would point out, as you did earlier, that let's take the modern system of mortgage finance in the U.S. It's one of the miracles in the world. Another contributor in my book, Jay Diamond, wrote about that. And yet it was used for dysfunctional purposes when, you know, actually the mortgage finance market has been one of the drivers of improved standards of living around the world. So innovation per se, it can be a good thing, but it has to be applied appropriately.
Yeah.
And there have been lots of financial weapons of mass destruction
right.
created over the years. But there have also been, I'm going to take insurance. There's an innovation. Or Paul Volcker's famous, the ATM. You know,
right, yeah.
Simple, low tech, uh-huh. but it's made the world a better place.
Yeah, it sure has. It sure has. Before we wrap up, I just want to ask you, you do some great surveys that could give us some insight into the direction of the economy. You know, consumer saving, spending, anything you want to share. Everybody wants to know what your crystal ball says. And sitting in your chair as CEO of RBC Wealth Management, you've got good information. What should we know?
Well, I do have access to good information. We have a legion of very smart, well-informed, knowledgeable analysts. And for your audience, I'd probably just leave you with one sort of uber thought. And that is that we believe that we are still in a secular bull market for equities. It's a slow, ugly growth scenario. We're in the middle of a correction that doesn't feel very good right now, but we believe the bull market in equities still has room to run, maybe for many years. And the one thing we look at...
That's a pretty stellar prediction, by the way.
It is, because it is right now. And, you know, I actually...
A lot of people would take issue with that one, but go ahead, yeah.
That's why I bring it up, because I thought it would be noteworthy. I just put money into the market because I believe that, and I think that the prices right now are a whole lot more attractive than they were a couple of months ago. But the point is, the danger signal for investors should be, do you see a recession on the horizon? If you see a recession, that's a bull market killer. We don't see a recession, at least not in the United States. So that's the one big point I would make. The other is, you know, interest rates are going to go up. Don't extend out too far in terms of maturities, and don't go too far down in terms of quality. Stay relatively short and stay in high quality fixed income. Don't be afraid to invest in the equity market. You will get paid over time if you do so today. Those are my crystal ball thoughts for today.
You are definitely an optimist. I mean, so does that parallel the economy in general?
Yeah, we're still in the middle of one of the slowest, but also the longest lives and steadiest recoveries in our lifetimes. And it still has room to go. And that is why we don't see a recession. We don't see a recession. We see equities continuing to deliver attractive returns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good stuff. Give out your website. Tell people where they can find out more.
www.rbcwealthmanagement.com.
Fantastic. Well, John Taft, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
The American Monetary Association is a nonprofit venture funded by the Jason Hartman Foundation, which is dedicated to educating people about the practical effects of monetary policy and government actions on inflation, deflation, and personal freedom. Our goal is to help people prosper in the midst of uncertain economic times. This show is produced by the Jason Hartman Foundation, all rights reserved. For publication rights and media interviews, please visit www.hartmanmedia.com or email media@hartmanmedia.com. Nothing on this show should be considered specific personal or professional advice. Please consult an appropriate professional if you require individualized advice. Opinions of guests are their own, and the host is acting on behalf of the Jason Hartman Foundation exclusively.